Buenas tardes a todos. Muchas gracias por estar aquí con nosotros en esta última conferencia del Hey Festival. Estamos acá con John Cassy, que ustedes habrán oído o habrán leído de él. John Cassy es director de Sky Arts en el Reino Unido y adicionalmente dirige el primer canal 3D que se creó en el mundo. Se lanzó en octubre del año pasado. Hoy hay más o menos 5 o 6, pero él creó el primero. Entonces, let's start, John. Okay, so the first thing we told when we were called to this conversation about the future of the television is that, I'm sorry, but television as we used to know it is dying, is disappearing. Why is that? Because it's changing so rapidly, so fast, and because internet arrives and the real convergence is finally with us. We were talking about convergence, I don't know, for the last 5 or 6 years. We were listening about this new machine, all in one, that we will have internet, mobile voice, and we will have also television in one machine. Well, now what we are seeing is that in your mobile phone you can do these three things. In your television you can do these three things. And also in your computer you can do these three things. So the first question I'm going to ask John is what he's seeing is happening in the world. And when this old change of television, the old model dying and the new model burning.
Sure. Yeah, well, thank you very much indeed for having me, first of all. I think that it's an incredibly exciting time to be working in TV. You know, if you are a creative person, if you're interested in society, how it's changing, how information is it travels and connects with people, then this is, you know, it's a brilliant time right now. But it's also very confusing, and I don't think anybody knows for certain what television or our television experience is going to look like 10 years from now, maybe even 5 years. But it is starting to change very rapidly. That said, I think that we believe that the TV that you have in your bedroom or your living room, the main set, will remain the main way that you watch TV. And if you look across the world, there are many more channels than there were in the past. There are a mixture of paid for, i.e. subscription television. There's ad supported. So there's lots of different ways that people are seeking to get TV to people in their homes or on the move. But, you know, I think that in terms of actual the main TV set, I think that is far from dying, I think. That's my view.
Okay, but you remain in your home. I mean, you stay in your home only at night and maybe early in the morning before you go to work. And the rest of the day, you are outside your home. You are in your office. You are, I mean, somewhere else. Yeah. And you still want to be connected to television and to digital contents. Then you have your laptop. Then you have your mobile phone. So most of the day, you use other devices to be connected to content.
Yeah. So. Sure, no, absolutely. Look, I mean, I think that although often most of the day, you know, when I go to work, I'm not allowed to watch TV all day. I have to do my work in that sort of sense. So, but yeah, I mean, different devices are certainly going to be supplementary ways that you watch TV. But I think that if you have the choice between watching a big film or a football match on a big screen or on your BlackBerry, I think most people would choose the bigger screen. But if you don't have the choice, if the only way that you can watch that content is on your BlackBerry or on your iPhone, then that's a brilliant way to watch the content. So I think it's the circumstances will dictate as much as anything how that's watched.
Okay, let's talk a bit about the audience. I mean, about us. We have so many offers of content. You have YouTube with millions of videos. We have Netflix. We have, you know, pay TV. We have free-to-air television. So we have millions of choices every day more. And we are also changing because now we realize that we have power on television, that we can decide, we can vote in certain programs. Certain television channels allow you to be fully interactive. So people is like more empowered now, and with more possibilities to act with television. What's happening with the audience according to your experience?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, the audience is, I think, much more engaged than it probably was in the past. But I think we can probably differentiate between what I would call traditional, straightforward television, which involves quality storytelling. So, you know, programs that are made by professionals that have strong narrative, cast, you know, great talent, well-known people, locations, high production values, versus quite a lot of the content that you would see on something like YouTube, which, you know, YouTube is great. I look at it a lot, but, you know, there are a lot of cats on skateboards. You know, it's kind of, there are cats falling off toilet seats, there are cats on water skis. You know, it's amusing, but I'm not sure it's compelling family entertainment, you know, compared to great dramas, great game shows, comedies, films, sports. So, you know, there are many, many more options. And clearly people are watching TV. They're not watching it in the way they used to. You know, they're using the internet at the same time. They are sending text messages. They are they're tweeting. They're on Facebook. So, you know, there is a battle for people's attention like there never was before.
That's true, but still YouTube. Let's talk a little bit about YouTube. In YouTube, you have 50% of cats on skateboards, but still you have some videos with millions of viewers, and sponsors are paying to be with these videos. And so big amount of money is going to the internet and maybe leaving behind a bit the television. So how is the internet affecting the television when television producers have to compete between themselves and also against the YouTube population creating content every day?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a huge challenge for most TV companies. In the UK, we have some free-to-air television. So we have the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, which is an amazing institution. It creates some of the what we would like to think the best programming in the world. There is also some free-to-air networks led by a company called ITV. And then there are pay TV companies, of which the one I work for is the major one. But to give you an example, Google now generates more advertising revenue than ITV. And ITV is a huge network. So they really have, you know, ITV faces big challenge because ad revenue is going from them to the internet, to YouTube, to Google and places like that. It's a challenge for Sky, the company I work for, but a smaller challenge because what we do is we offer a service that people choose to pay for or not. So they're not a, you know, they can choose not to and we don't get any money. But if they do want to take our services, they pay us. So we're less worried about advertising. So that's one of the big challenges. And I think that if TV is going to really succeed and continue to invest and innovate, I think that more TV companies will be subscription funded and will go down that route. I think the traditional advertising model is less robust than it was, certainly in the UK and large parts of Western Europe, because Google is offering different ways to reach consumers.
Okay, now that you mentioned innovation and that you had mentioned before the social media, is your TV channel or Sky is also on the internet trying to distribute some content? Is also on social networks as Facebook? What is it doing? Because television cannot be apart from the rest of the internet world.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, we're doing lots. We're experimenting in lots of different ways. I mean, so the way our business works is that you pay a subscription each month to receive a variety of channels, and that might be sports, movies, news, documentaries, whatever it may be. And you pay that, you receive that content via a satellite dish to your house. That's the main way people watch the content. But also we give them the opportunity to watch it in mobile ways. So, for example, on the iPad, on their iPhone, we have Facebook sites, we have Twitter feeds, we have lots of different ways of taking that content, but to be able to get the vast majority of it, and certainly the video content, you have to be paying us that main subscription. So, and you know, we think that if people pay us, they're paying us for a reason. They're paying us because the alternative isn't as good. You know, if there was something better for free, why would you pay for it? So there's a real kind of incentive for us to develop great television because if we don't develop great television, people will cancel and they'll go elsewhere. So it's a kind of virtuous circle. I mean, there's a real culture at Sky about delivering the best possible content, because, you know, it's a privilege, not a right, to have a subscriber.
Okay. We were invited here to talk about the future. Let's talk about kids. Kids are our future. When we were born, real world was like our primary world. And digital came afterwards as a complement. We realized after what we could do with a computer and internet, we knew internet when we were grown up. But kids, no. Kids is completely different. Digital world for kids is like the main world. And the real things came as a complement. So what's happening with kids? Kids are our future. They won't want the same television as we are used to see. So what's the future of the television for the kids that now have the digital world as their main world?
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of quite scary, really. I mean, it's amazing what kids can do now with TV and also are going to be able to do. But I think it's worth kind of remembering how recently there was very little choice in the marketplace. I mean, when I was a kid in the UK, there were three channels. That was it. I remember when the fourth one launched and we were all incredibly excited to have four channels and we thought, this is amazing, it can't get much better. And now we have, I think, 500 channels in the UK. I mean, you know, many of them aren't very good, but there are some very, very good channels. And I think that, you know, if you are age 21 or under in the UK, you've never known anything less than 400 or 500 channels. So kids today or the younger generation don't know anything different. So their expectations are much greater. Interestingly, we were talking earlier. I recently came back from a holiday, and some of the people we were on holiday with, they had a 2-year-old, and one of the ways that they kept her entertained in her pram was that she had her own iPad. Right now, for me, that was pretty amazing. But this little girl, she was phenomenal. I mean, she could use her iPad better than I can. There is an app on the iPad for a very successful children's character in the UK called Peppa Pig. She's a little pink pig, and she wears a variety of brightly coloured clothes. And the app allows you to dress her up in different outfits or whatever. And this little girl who's in her pram can turn the iPad on, go to the relevant app, load up Peppa Pig, and dress her in lots of different outfits and win points for dressing her in all pink or in all blue. I mean, it was amazing. I just thought it was fantastic. So I think that kids are going to, you know, their expectations versus when we were growing up are very different.
And we have to be prepared to give them what they want, because if we are more demanding every day, imagine how they are.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, and I was just going to say, I mean, you know, and often this little girl, when she goes home and she goes to the television in the living room or, you know, the main TV, she touches it, and when nothing happens, she thinks it's not working properly.
Okay, so how are you, how is Sky is preparing for that future? Those kids are always with a video game, you know, Nintendo DS or something in their hands. How is Sky preparing for, from 10 years on, when these people are grown-ups?
Well, I mean, we're exploring all these different options. I think some of them will be very exciting and some of them will probably disappear, or they'll be taken over by something even more exciting. But I think that one of the guiding philosophies for us is that at the heart of it, you have to have great content, because it doesn't really matter how many buttons you can press on a gadget or how fast your BlackBerry is. If you don't have great content, and by that I mean great storytelling, locations, talent, then people aren't going to be that interested. So we're making sure we have the best possible content. Because we're a paid-for business, we try and make that content exclusive, because it goes back to that thing of, why would I pay if I could get it free in another way? And then we try to make the products that we have as friendly and as user-friendly for the subscribers as possible. So we give them the ability to record programs at the touch of a button, to use their BlackBerry to record programs at home that they may have forgotten about, to take their iPad on the move, to watch online. You know, we have to make it a valuable experience for them. So that's what we're kind of preparing for. But also, I think we're very aware of the fact that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we may be watching television in an entirely different way. So like everybody, we're trying to predict the future.
Okay, let's talk a bit about 3D. You ran the first 3D channel in the whole world. There are right now 5 or 6, but you ran the first one. How, I mean, is there enough content, there enough audience to run a full 3D channel?
Well, it's been a really interesting year. It's a very exciting time. We're at the start of what I think will be quite a long journey, but hopefully an exciting one. But I think that 3D is the latest stage in a story that television has, a fairly kind of constant story throughout time. Because if you look back, the things that have driven change and innovation in television have always been better picture quality and better sound. You know, if you think back to the earliest days of cinema, there were silent black and white pictures. Sound was then introduced. Black and white TV launched. Colour television launched. And actually, when colour television launched in the UK, there were a lot of questions asked about why would you want to watch colour TV? Black and white is fine, people said. And it seems ridiculous now. And it went from colour to analog, digital, high definition, you know, and now 3D is the latest stage. So it's early days. We were launched to consumers in October of this year, last year. We think about 140,000 3D TV sets have been sold in the UK. So it's not a huge number yet, and we're in about half of those homes. But it's getting an amazing reception. And I think you only have to look at films like Avatar, Toy Story, which, you know, Avatar is the biggest grossing film of all time, to see that there is a demand there for people to watch this content.
But now that you mention movies, I mean, we already had 3D in movies. It was a fashion, and then it disappeared. And now it came again because of Avatar. But international film distributors think that 3D is again a fashion that will disappear in 1 or 2 years. What do you think about their opinion?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, I'm not sure all the film distributors do think that. I mean, I think that certainly 3D came and went. I mean, 3D's been around for over 100 years. I mean, it's kind of a long history. But I think that the reason why it's different this time is that, again, back to this thing of quality. I mean, I don't know if it ever came out here, but was Jaws 3D? Did you remember the film Jaws about the shark?
Yes.
Okay, so Jaws 3D. I mean, most people remember that, and it was terrible, absolutely terrible. You wore these awful kind of green and red glasses. The experience was bad. But I think that if you create a bad product or a bad story, no matter what the technology is, people aren't silly. They will turn off, and I think that's what the problem was. Today, the technology has moved on so that the storytelling can be much better and can be much more seamless. And I think that, you know, you look at the number of movies coming through, the Hollywood studios are really behind 3D, partly because they can charge more money for it. And the TV manufacturers want to create 3D TVs because they can sell more TVs. And companies like ours, we like 3D because it enables us to offer something different from the free TV network. So I think there is something there. How big it will become, how quickly, we don't know, but it's something we feel we should be in.
And people can watch a full 3D TV channel, having to wear glasses. Some people feel dizzy. I mean, you still think that it's here to stay? 3D,
yeah, no, I do. I do, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people in 3D, they talk about immersion. So the idea that it's an immersive experience, you get much more involved in it. I mean, I don't know how many of you guys have watched 3D, but it's you kind of need to see it to believe it. We were talking earlier. When I've got a 3D TV at home now, because obviously I think it's brilliant and I watch my channel. But when my mother came to stay, before she watched it, she was very skeptical. I mean, my mum is a very young, 62 years old. She's has a BlackBerry. She's still working. She's, you know, very energetic. But for her, the idea of 3D was a bit weird. She remembered Jaws 3D. She didn't want to see it again. But, you know, she came over and I gave her the glasses. She said, oh, do I have to wear glasses? This is going to be weird. But the moment the TV turned on, her mouth opened. She was like, oh, really? And she kind of began to giggle and kind of thought it was really interesting. So I think you need to see it to really believe it. But again, it's going to be down to companies like us to provide the shows that my mother or, you know, kids will want to watch. Because if the content isn't good enough, it doesn't matter what the technology is.
What is next after 3D? Some people talk about 4D, which is basically the same 3D as we know it, but also with smells and feelings in your skin. Some other people talk about holograms. What do you think is next after 3D?
Well, yeah, I don't know for certain, but I imagine it's going to be crazy, and I imagine things that, you know, we haven't even envisaged will come up. I mean, 4D TV is not something I've seen myself, but, you know, there are films and ways of showing films whereby, you know, if this was a cinema, they would have on the walls various different kind of valves that would send scent into the room. So if the film was showing flowers, then you would have the smell of flowers at that time. I mean, it sounds crazy, but the technology is there. At the moment in the UK, one of the big questions around 3D is the glasses. People say that as long as there are glasses, 3D won't take off. You need to get rid of the glasses. And so there are TVs now without glasses. They're very early stage. But I actually think that probably 10 years from now, it won't be the glasses so much that we laugh about. It will be the TV screens themselves. I mean, I think you probably won't need a screen. It may be some kind of hologram or some kind of immersive experience. But I think the technology we have now, even though it's very new, is almost like where we were with mobile cellular phones in the 1980s in the UK, where they were huge. They were like bricks and enormous. And we look back and go, that's amazing. But, you know, progress has moved on.
Well, now that you mentioned these 3D TVs without glasses, right now, 3 weeks ago in the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, Sony and Samsung launched their 3D TVs without glasses. Especially the Samsung one was very, very well received because you could watch 3D from all different angles without wearing glasses. And also the sound adjusted depending on your movements and depending on the movies. Are you preparing for, I mean, you ran the first TV 3D yeah. channel. Are you preparing for this 3D without glasses?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we say we're looking forward to it. I mean, I think absolutely. We will deliver the content to whatever type of set that's capable of taking it. I mean, interestingly, some colleagues of mine have just returned from a trip to Korea and the manufacturing company LG, and they are releasing around Easter a television that's 3D and is 4 millimeters thick. So it's, you know, the actual TV is 4 millimeters thick, and it's kind of, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. The ones they have in the Consumer Electronics Shows were like, you know, like paintings. When you had your TV off, it looks like a sculpture or painting in your wallet. I mean, it's amazing the aesthetic part of it also. Yeah. Okay, let's go back to holograms. In the last presidential elections in the U.S., we could watch at CNN how this correspondent in Chicago suddenly appeared in the studio in New York, you know, as Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you think about holograms? Is the new television after 3D?
I don't know. I mean, I think I remember watching that, and I remember thinking it's fun, but I'm not sure it's the future of TV. I mean, it looked a bit like a gimmick, if that makes sense. So, but I think that the ability to kind of project images without screen in the future could be a big thing.
Are you working in the UK on something related to it?
Well, I mean, we as a company aren't, because we're about providing the we don't make screens, but I understand that, you know, around the world there are a lot of very smart scientists working on all sorts of ways to deliver content. But we're into delivering content to different devices. So Nintendo have launched a new console, which is 3D. It's the DS. It's got 3D content on it. We're providing content to them, just like we can, you know, you can watch Sky Movies through the Xbox, the Microsoft Xbox. So it's kind of, we're looking at ways to get our content onto different devices.
Okay, so for now, you stick to 3D, traditional 3D.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we've only done 4 months of it. We've got a way to go.
Okay. Your company haven't said how much have spent in this 3D channel, but I'm sure there are millions of pounds. Yeah. Are you recovering these millions of pounds? Are sponsoring paying special rates to be in a 3D channel? Are subscriptors paying special rates to be in a 3D channel? Are you recovering this investment?
Well, at the moment, yeah, we've made a significant investment in it. At the moment, it's free to customers who basically take our top packages. So the customers who pay us the most money, we give them something back. So we give them 3D for free. So it's seen as a reward for them, but also for us, it's a way of encouraging people to take, you know, the more expensive packages. But it'll remain free for the future. 5 years from now, I don't know, but you know, at the moment, we see it as an investment in giving something back to our customers and also growing our brand, because it's created a lot of excitement in the UK, and it means that our company is seen in a better, more dynamic light than our competitors.
Okay, let's talk about what's happening today in Egypt. We have seen how television and how the content through the internet is affecting politics in Egypt today. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, you see that today they forbid all the internet in Egypt because, I mean, this is dangerous for what is going on. Yeah. So what's your opinion on how television and new media is changing the world? Politics, culture, interfering things. What's your opinion?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think particularly in the news environment, technology is kind of quite remarkable, and you know, the events in Egypt over the last week have been amazing. I mean, if you look back over the last kind of 20, 30 years, quite often big political change has, you know, the way technology has covered it has been quite transformative. I mean, we talked earlier about when the Berlin Wall fell and the end of kind of communism in Eastern Europe, and you know, a contributing factor, I mean, by no means the cause, but a contributing factor is seen to be early satellite TV, in terms of what it was doing is broadcasting beyond borders. So people in East Germany could watch MTV, they could see a different world, and it created a kind of aspirational view that they actually decided they wanted to change things to get to that sort of level. I also remember at the start of the first Gulf War, when CNN was in its very early stages, but the fact that it got cameras in and the technology enabled us to see that conflict in a way that, you know, conflicts had never been seen before, but also effectively created a very powerful international news channel. And I think, you know, you see how Twitter's played out in Egypt over the last few days. I mean, it's a great thing for democracy, I think.
Okay, let's change a little bit the subject. We are here at the Hay Festival. We have heard so many great conferences with writers, and we have read a lot the last few days. Some people here may think television is rubbish. Why see television when we have a good book to read? What's your answer to that?
Okay, no, it's a good question. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you know, it's a hugely subjective thing. I mean, without a doubt, I think there's quite a lot of rubbish on television, but I also think there's some great programs out there. You know, talking about technology and how television develops, I mean, I think one of the great things that technology has brought over the last 20, 30 years is effectively the ability for there to be more channels. Now, with more channels has come some that aren't great at all, but there have been some ones which provide, I think, a real service. And, you know, one of the other channels that I run is this Sky Arts channel. And really the reason why I'm here is that we partner with the Hay Festival in the UK. And we have worked with them for the last 4 or 5 years. And we broadcast, you know, we broadcast a lot of the Hay Festival that day. We do about 20, 30 hours of broadcasting of the best sessions. We do, we show the concerts. We have our own chat show. And we put that in prime time. And the people who watch it absolutely adore it. You know, we don't get huge audiences for it, but for the people who come to it, they love it because they can't see it anywhere else. You know, they are people who are disappointed by the world of X Factor and things like that. They come for a better quality of TV, and you know, the content, for want of a better word, that a festival like Hay delivers is amazing. So those people really find it a very, very great service, and they are prepared to pay for it.
At the same time, in the UK, you have, as you mentioned, the X Factor, which just had the biggest ratings ever.
Yeah.
So you can have both things.
You can. Yeah. Yeah. No. Absolutely. I mean, I think that what's interesting. I mean, we are very much about pay TV, but with the free model, still, if it gets the right program, can do amazingly. I mean, X Factor is, you've had X Factor in Colombo, haven't you? But not for a year or so, I think. 3 years, yeah. So, I mean, X Factor in the UK is a phenomena. I mean, it was the final, which took place just before Christmas this year, had nearly 20 million viewers. So that's one in every three people in the UK was watching that program. It was the biggest TV audience for 8.5 years on TV. And this is at a time when everybody is saying it's all about the internet or your iPad. You know, it's people were gathered around their big TVs in their living rooms or in their bedrooms watching this program. The series generated £250 million in advertising. And if you look at the coverage in the newspapers, it was on the front page of the tabloid newspapers pretty much every day. And there was... they did a valuation of how much it would have cost to replace the articles about X Factor with advertising, you know, the space, and it was about £140 million, and that was free coverage. So it's, you know, for the right program, television and free television can still really deliver huge value.
But at the same time in the UK, sponsors are investing more in the internet than in television.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's the challenge for the free TV model, because if you are an advertiser, you can go online and get more accurate delivery for lower cost. So that's why we believe that subscription TV is a better business to be in.
Okay, right now we have questions. So if you want to ask anything to just John Cassie.
Yes, hi. On several moments during the conversation, you mentioned investment and how the pie is shifting from television and radio towards the internet. Mm-hmm. UK is the biggest example of how internet spending has now surpassed television. Because of this, you can say that the quality or the quantity of programming in television has been reduced, and it will continue to be reduced. How do you see 3D television, or even just regular cable pay television, how can it continue producing quality programming and more expensive programming with new equipment for 3D productions in this changing landscape of advertising spending?
Sure. Well, I think it's a really good question, and it's why that we think that it's going to be, I mean, without a doubt, the impact of the internet has been hugely positive in many ways, but also for some of the traditional models of TV, it's challenging. For TV that depends on advertising, it's more of a problem because, you know, as we were saying, it's quite often cheaper and more the better delivery to go online. Now, we would say that from a pay TV business, as long as you are offering programming that you can't get elsewhere for free and that isn't better for free, you would hope people will continue to pay you for that product. And it's a very it's a very transparent product, because if people don't like what they're being asked to pay for, they won't pay for it. And we know that, and so we always have to do our very best to deliver really high quality programs. Otherwise, why would you pay? So I think there's an incentive for us to keep on investing. It's one of the reasons why we've gone into 3D. But you're right. I mean, 3D, it's more expensive to make. It's more technically challenging. And there is less content out there. But I think that if you believe in progress, if you believe that people want great picture, great sound, and great entertainment, then it's worth investing. And that's what we've decided to do.
Hi. My question is more or less the same. The thing is, you've insisted consistently on that if you can offer something that is not elsewhere for free, then you really have something to invest on. But the thing is, it is somewhere else for free. And it, more so with ongoing time. I can find all the TV shows that I like on the internet, and my computer can be plugged on the TV, so I don't even have to choose from a small screen to the big screen. So I was wondering, are you afraid? How is this relevant to all of the future for things like the ones you're doing? Thank you.
Sure, okay. No, it's a really good question. I mean, I think that, and I probably talk mostly with the experience of the UK market, but I think there are common themes in that, you know, I guess piracy is a big issue. There is a lot of programming available for free online, which actually shouldn't be there. You know, the people who made it and own it don't expect it to be on those made available that way. You know, you can download films that are out in the movie theaters in Hollywood, you know, in Hollywood right now. You can download them probably for free in Colombia. You can in the UK, but that is illegal. We believe that the people who make those programs, who invest their time and their money, should be paid for them. They shouldn't be stolen. So we are. We take a lot of time on internet security. We try and protect our programs. And we also have certain programs that you just can't get online for free, such as Premier League football, which is one of the big, big things in the UK. You know, you can't get that online for free, certainly live. There are delayed highlights, but, you know, if you want to know what is happening between Manchester United and Chelsea, you're not prepared to wait a week. You want to know now. So yeah, there is a challenge, but if you can keep exclusive content, you have a good chance.
But John, I'm sorry, John, today is illegal, today is piracy, but in the future, I mean, people will find a way to put the Premier League match into the internet. Don't you think like the business model should change that, because you cannot, we say in Spanish, we cannot cover the sun with one finger. Yeah. I mean, today is illegal, today is piracy, but maybe in 5 days it wouldn't be illegal and would be piracy, because it's impossible to fight to such a, millions of people putting everything on the internet.
Yeah, well, I think that, it is a big issue, but I'm not sure it's in the interests of either, if you take the example of the Premier League, I'm not sure it's in their interests to make it free, because somebody has to pay the footballers, they have to build the stadiums, they have to create the programs, and unless there is money going into those things, then the quality won't be there. I mean, before we started to broadcast Premier League in the UK, the Premier League was, English football was not great. You know, there was violence, there were stadiums that were falling down, the players weren't very good, but we've invested a lot of money in that, and there are now better players from around the world. The stadiums are great. It's a much more family-driven thing. And we were able to do that because our customers were prepared to pay to see good football played, and we pass on that money to the game.
Gracias. Buenas noches. Quisiera preguntarte si tú consideras que los estados deben de tener un canal de televisión o simplemente por la dificultad que tienen, por la tecnología, lo costoso que es para invertir en eso, debe tener simplemente un ente regulador de la televisión privada. Tal vez ¿me entendiste?
Okay. Yeah. No. It's a good question. I mean, I think that I certainly believe that you should have a healthy broadcasting world where different views of all political shades are represented, and people can, you know, they can express their different views. In the UK, we have the BBC, which is an amazing organisation. It's funded by a licence fee, so each individual who owns a TV has to pay to watch the BBC. You have to pay to actually watch TV in the UK. It's a good model because the BBC is independent of the state, and I think that's important. I think there is a risk if, you know, governments run TV stations, there is a risk that they could end up, particularly at times of crisis, just saying what the government wants them to say, and I'm not sure that's great. And in terms of regulation, I think there are probably certain, you know, standards around issues of taste, of, you know, racial incitement, that, you know, you do need to have a level of control or at least protection for people, but certainly not in a way that it restricts people's liberties, if that makes sense.
I'm sure you agree that convergence is potentially much more than just adding new potential platforms for delivery of content. It also is throwing up many more possibilities for what that content actually is. I guess my question is whether you think that there is enough that is exciting, enough exciting innovations in the content of television at the moment that are taking advantage of the potentials that convergence is offering, things like interactivity, and what that's doing how that's changing the nature of content, and what the future is going to look like for in that area.
Yeah, no, it's again, it's a good question. I mean, I think technology is moving incredibly quickly. There are some brilliant things being done. There are also some brilliant sounding things that are being done, but they aren't actually being used by a lot of people. I mean, what we believe as a company is that innovation is incredibly important, but we won't innovate just for the sake of innovating. We want to know that it's something that consumers will want to interact with, will think we need to know there's a demand for it. Otherwise, you can create white elephants. Is there a white elephant a phrase here? Probably not. No, you can create things that cost a lot of money that no one uses. So I think that without a doubt, more interactivity will come. There's still some pretty impressive things out there. I mean, one stat that I was fascinated by was in January of this year, so what, 1 month ago, a new game launched via Facebook called Cityville, and there are now more than 500 million people playing Cityville in the world today in 1 month.
I'm playing Cityville.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, but that's in 1 month. And I think, you know, Facebook launched, and I think it got 500 million users in 4 months, something like that, which was amazing. But to do that in 1 month is phenomenal. So I think that, as I said at the very beginning, you know, if you are a creative person who has got great ideas, the access to technology, it's an amazingly exciting time to be able to create something really exciting.
Hi. Are people willing to pay for an arts channel in the UK? They used to BBC very high quality content for years and years. Do you bundle it into other packages, or do you get people to pay for it separately? Yeah.
So our channel is available as part of a bundle. So the Arts Channel, before Sky owned it, it was available as a standalone subscription. So you could pay £6 a month to get it, but that business model didn't really work. So we now offer it as part of our package, and it works because it goes to a much wider audience. The cost is spread, and people come to it and they really value it. So it's not something. Well, there's a group of people who would watch it every day, but there's a much bigger group of people who will dip in, dip out, have a look at it when they feel that there's nothing else they want to watch and they want something of better quality and a bit more makes them think. And so it is working. The BBC still does some great arts, but they don't show as much as they did, and they certainly don't show it in prime time. So we've decided that that's what we're going to do, and there is a demand for it.
¿Alguna otra pregunta? John, something else you want to add before we wrap up?
Oh, golly. I've got a question back to you then in terms of where in Colombia. I mean, what are the things that kind of define how TV really succeeds in Colombia? I mean, is it the quality of the programming? Is it the technology? I'd be interested to see.
I mean, the quality of the television in Colombia is really good. I mean, I kind of speak for RCN because I worked there for 7 years. RCN Television really focused on quality of the content. We had this Ugly Betty, we have sold Ugly Betty to more than 70 countries around the world, and 25 more have made their own Ugly Bettys, the US, India, China, France, Italy. So, I mean, we really think about quality of the content, but we are also thinking about new platforms, new technology. We are doing every day more 360-degree strategies because we think we have to have one side on television, one step on television, and the other on the internet, and we have to have also mobile applications, and we have to be also on social networks. I mean, basically, when you have good content, you have to be where people are, and people are in all of this. So yes, we focus in content, but we are also in all the rest of the platforms.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting because, I mean, Ugly Betty was very successful in the UK. It was the US version, but it was very popular. But I think that kind of almost goes back to my point, which is you need a great television show or a great story to be able to kind of build the foundations of a successful franchise, and then you build the apps and the other ways of distributing around it. So I think if you're a storyteller, a program maker, it's still a very exciting time to be involved in what you're doing. It's just how you make it pay and you make it get to people that's the real challenge, I think.
Yes, but there are different strategies. For instance, Nickelodeon. For Nickelodeon, the business right now is on the internet. I mean, they are doing television content because they want to send people to the internet because they are earning more on the internet. I mean, proportionally speaking. So, I mean, there are strategies. It's true that when you have a big phenomenon on television like Ugly Betty or The X Factor, of course, you do all of the rest of the things as complementary. But for Nickelodeon, in their channels where they focus to kids, the main thing is the internet. So it's all about the strategy.
Yeah, I mean, it probably is different because they do it slightly different in the UK. But I think that I genuinely believe that if great storytellers are, there are some people who do it purely out of a desire to tell stories. Well, in fact, most of us probably that's one of the biggest drivers. But they still have to eat. They still have to, feed their kids, and you need to find a way for them to cover costs and wages. And I think that, there is a challenge on how you do that purely on the internet. But I think that, in time, I'm sure it will happen, but it's just challenging at the moment.
Final question. Why you think in the UK, as we mentioned like before, as Philip was asking, why you think in the UK sponsors are investing more in the internet than television?
I think it's fairly simple because, you know, something like Google, which is now bigger than the biggest TV network, you know, it delivers a kind of accuracy on advertising that TV simply can't. You know, it doesn't have that. TV is the best way to reach a mass audience. It still is. And I think, you know, if you put your ad in a show like X Factor, it will cost you a lot of money. But if your aim is to reach millions of people, there is no quicker and better way of doing it. But if you are trying to reach different audiences, very targeted audiences, Google and the internet is a pretty compelling way. So, you know, it's a challenge if you are a big network like ITV, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it develops.
I mean, that's true all over the world, but the UK is the first country that the sponsors are investing more than on the internet. In the US, internet spending is bigger than radio spending, but not as big as television spending. Is there something particular in the UK, or why did it happen only in the UK?
Yeah, I, to be honest, a really good question. I don't know, because we certainly have a lot of TV channels. We've got a very competitive market. So, you know, I probably should know the answer, but I don't.
Okay. Bueno, no sé si de verdad hay una pregunta final o cerramos y le damos las gracias a John y pues se acaba el Hey Festival.